The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
What is going on, guys? You are listening to the HSP AEW Dynamite Recap Show. I am Jeff Martin, alongside my tag team partner, the trendsetter Brian Burgo. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew, and we are here on the WWE Unofficial Podcast. Follow us on all our social media, guys, at High Spot Podcast. Back with you here, trendsetter. A different kind of AEW because it is a Saturday night trendsetter, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the Saturday because we needed the break. But it is a very, very good show because it was going head-to-head for a little bit against NXT TakeOver 30.
Yeah, I mean, what a way to do it. It wasn't planned. It wasn't set out to be that way right now. But, you know, that was the situation here. It was something different. Obviously, the NBA had something to do with it because they need that those time slots. So that's why AEW shifted over to Saturday. Kind of nice. Kind of something different, though, too. But, you know, you're right, Jeff. They put out all the works right now. I don't think it was because they were competing side-to-side with NXT. I think it was more that they wanted to bring something new to Saturdays, make it exciting. And granted, you know, sports is back. But still, the one constant that's been there during this whole pandemic has been pro wrestling.
Yeah, so let's get started, trendsetter, because there's so much going on here. And again, follow us on all our social media, High Spot Podcast. Better. We are on bodyslam.net. And also, good to be back here for another week, Saturday night, trendsetter, at 6 o'clock here on the mothership. Not TBS, but TNT. So we open up with FTR alongside Tully Blanchard. They get a win against Private Party. But I think the main thing here, trendsetter, is now you're seeing kind of the real side of FTR, because now, again, aligning themselves with one of the baddest guys to ever be in this business in Tully Blanchard really shows that they're kind of turning to that dark side that we always thought they were going to be in.
Well, let's be honest. Nobody was fooled. I doubt you were fooled, Jeff, that when FTR first arrived to AEW, that this was their true intention. That they wanted to be buddy-buddies with the Elite. They wanted to be a fair-fighting tag team. No, this is what they were in WWE. This is what they are now forming in AEW. So anybody who's surprised, I have no idea what they're talking about. Now, being associated with Tully, good move right there. Good move. Good business move by the...
It's very old school.
Yeah, by the decision-making people there at AEW and FTR to have Tully in their corner. He's the guy who's been a champion before. He's a guy who knows what it takes to be a winner. Not that they don't right now, but again, they're in a new landscape, and they want to make sure they have right direction. And the only thing Tully Blanchard does really well, better than be champions, Jeff, and be a tag team champion, be a United States champion in the past, is he gets dressed really quick. So that's what he's really good at.
Yeah, no, really, and it just shows you that AEW, again, is doing a good job in putting these managers, because in AEW, they're doing is really showing the importance of having managers in there, because they help also put shine to these wrestlers. So adding Tully Blanchard to FTR is a good decision, and we'll see more of FTR in a little bit here, though, but they get a big win over Private Party. So, you know, eventually their quest for those tag team titles are going to come to fruition, I believe, sooner than later. We get MJF and we get John Moxley. We're back and forth now as Labor Day weekend, September the 5th, All Out. We are rapidly approaching that day, trendsetter, and you got Moxley giving a little bit of praise to MJF, saying that he's going to be the guy for the next 25 years, but also says that his opportunity is not going to happen, though, on September the 5th. And he says that MJF has like something to hide as well, too, and that the whole world is going to see it. And then MJF, you know, has a perfect rebuttal and says that basically that in a neck brace and all, after he's still suffering the effects of the paradigm shift, now he's looking to have it banned before we head into All Out. And that could be a major sign that the ultimate heel move is to have someone's finisher banned before a big title fight. I just think that this lead-in is going to be really good. We're going to get a contract signing next week, of course. Both companies love contract signings, right? So we're going to see what exactly they have in store for us on Thursday next week for AEW. But a huge contract signing, and this rivalry continues to grow. And we had a back-and-forth promos. Your thoughts? Are you really getting hyped up for this matchup heading into All Out?
I wouldn't know if I'd say hyped up, but I am interested in it, though, because there are a lot of truths behind it right now. Basically, everything that MJF has talked about leading up to this point right now as we go in closer and closer to All Out, believe it or not, Labor Day weekend, the end of summer. I don't want to think about September right now. I'm trying to enjoy August as much as I possibly can. But a lot of truth in what MJF was talking about. John Moxley rebuttaling to and basically stating the obvious truth. We know, and a lot of people who are watching AEW, whether you're fans of MJF or not, you know this guy is going to be the future of this company. Any company, but you know, he signed with AEW now. Smart move on their part. This guy has talent beyond belief in terms of what he can do. So ahead of his time, he's still so fairly young. So you're right, he will be the next guy for the next 25 years. But John Moxley, who's currently the champion now, says, but it's not now. And that's the difference. And then you're right. Now going back and trying to ban the move, it's a classic thing we see nowadays. It seems to be the new norm where, you know, to put more emphasis on the, putting the champion in an uphill battle, basically by taking his finishing move away from him. It causes intrigue now for us, the audience, to be like, well, now maybe it might be possible that MJF might win this or not. Because if you match them paired head-to-head, you would think right now, hey, it's not MJF's time right now. It's not his time. We know it's going to happen. But now adding that element, that dimension to this match now, if that is what's going to happen where the move will be banned, it puts the probability now of MJF winning this in a lot higher probability for us to look at it, and so it gives the ability that he could possibly win this match.
Yeah, it puts Moxley against the wall here, behind the wall here, because you know he will not be able, most likely, to use the paradigm shift. He will probably get coerced into saying, hey, you know what though, I don't need that move to beat you and stuff. So obviously adds the heel with the advantage heading into All Out. We'll see what happens at the contract signing.
My question is, where did MJF get 5 million signatures?
Oh, I know.
In this day and age, with pandemic, how many people are signing that thing?
No,
has it been tested for COVID-19?
I don't know. We get in a surprising not turn of events, but a surprising match. Jurassic Express and the National Nightmares get the victory over Lucha Bros and Butcher and the Blade. Lucha Bros, Butcher and the Blade, kind of slumping a little bit in the tag team division. And you thought here in an 8-man tag team match, we'd get them, getting back to the winning ways. And then of course, with QT Marshall being kind of the weak link of any team, and that's just because that's how the way they make it seem on AEW. A little surprising that they get the victory here. A very good match. Again, Jurassic Express always really impresses when they're in the ring. They get the victory, and then post-wise, Eddie Kingston comes out, and he tries to, try to get heal egos. He's trying to heal the egos of the Lucha Bros and Butcher and the Blade, hyping them up, trying to get their confidence back. And who knows? A lot of people are saying that there's going to be a faction here. It's weird to have a singles competitor with two tag teams in a faction. So we'll see what happens there, Trendsetter. But very, very interesting that Eddie Kingston's got to add a little bit of, ego smoothing out there for both teams, because let's be honest, both of them have been on kind of a slide for the past few months in AEW.
Oh, it's the Butcher and the Blade. The butcher and the blade. Hi-ho to Mario, the Butcher and the Blade. Jeez, yep. I'm sorry. I thought we were still going. My bad. No, you're right, man. Both teams have struggled. But, that's the amazing thing with this tag team division being so deep, that the competition's high up there. And if you're on a one or two, even three match losing streak, that's huge. So Kingston comes out. We're trying to wonder and trying to figure out what was going to happen when he did officially sign with AEW, where he was going to fit in the category. Was going to be a singles guy? What was going to happen? Makes sense right now. He's a great mouthpiece. He's a great talker. And what you've noticed more nowadays, not just in AEW, Jeff, in pro wrestling now, for situations where either it's teams or individuals struggling to get themselves noticed when they do have ability out there, that you have if you have a good mouthpiece, a good manager, quote-unquote, or an advocate, as we use, then you're in a better situation right now. And maybe people can be hyped up on you. You don't necessarily have to take the struggle, which it is nowadays, to grab a microphone and really convey your emotions to an audience. Granted, there is no audience out there. So I think Kingston and this, it's interesting. Don't really know how it's going to work out, but at least that's the one word that's important. I'm interested to see what happens here, because if it all works itself out the way Eddie Kingston hopes it does, that would be a pretty interesting stable right there. And AEW seems to be now the place of stables.
Yeah.
Not just tag team champions and tag team wrestling.
Yep. We get Orange Cassidy interview with Tony Schiavone. To me, this is one of the highlights of the show, because it sets up a third installment in the Jericho and Orange Cassidy feud, and it's going to happen at All Out, because Orange Cassidy accepts the challenge of Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho says he's kind of proud of Cassidy. He's kind of learned from Orange Cassidy, and he wants the win again in that rubber match. And not only
what could he possibly learn from Orange Cassidy, do you think?
No, no, the Orange Cassidy learned from Chris Jericho.
Oh, that's what's yeah, yeah. the opposite, yeah.
So we're going to get a Mimosa Mayhem match at All Out. Only Chris Jericho could think of such a great thing here.
I love how you're keeping a straight face on that, too. Yeah. A Mimosa match. Yeah. You mix champagne of a little bit of the bubbly with orange juice, yeah. you get Mimosa.
You get a Mimosa. 80 gallons of 100% pure orange juice and 500 cases Ooh. Of a little bit of the bubbly will be at All Out. And you can either win by submission, pinfall, or throwing your opponent in a little bit of the bubbly in Mimosa. So obviously this is creative. This is going to be probably a fun match to watch at All Out. Hey, another Orange Cassidy, Chris Jericho fight. A number three we're going to get. So looking forward to this. Jericho gets the advantage today, trendsetter, by pouring champagne all over Orange Cassidy.
Talk about that stinging your eyes. It's ridiculous. Oh. I never had champagne, but I heard that's what it does because, you know, I don't drink alcohol.
I've never won a championship either, so I wouldn't know what it's like to get doused in champagne.
But I will get, before this year's over, I will get a little bit of the bubbly. Just to have it. Just
no, it's sold out. Thing.
At some point, hopefully by the end of the year, if it's available, I will get one.
Again,
hopefully.
Yeah.
Or maybe next year, 2021, when it's a lot better, maybe we can celebrate better because it's in a more enjoyable year to have than 2020. But interesting. Jeff, did you ever think we were going to get more than just one match out of Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho? The fact that they've made it come to three, the rubber match going to be at All Out, but the mere fact that we've all been interested in and kind of invested in it, regardless of what people think of Orange Cassidy, regardless of what people think of this rivalry, it's been intriguing enough where it's been things that have been different, things that have kind of continued the way of those things that we miss every once in a while, these long storylines that
long feuds, yeah.
don't over emphasize or aren't forced to be fed down our throat, but showcase the fact that every once in a while we start getting a little bit interested in it. So yeah. Did you think it was going to go past one?
Who knew a storyline with alcohol could actually be interesting? You know what I mean? So done the right way, you can do it. So yeah, no, it's looking forward to All Out, looking forward to the rubber match. And yes, man, if Chris Jericho's behind it, I can definitely believe that it's going to be a tremendous a match. And it has been. It has been a great series. We're going to find out who's going to win the rubber match here at All Out. So... you know, something we've been talking about here on the show for the last few weeks is, you know, the kind of change in Kenny Omega, man. Like, I don't
love
know
it.
What to make
I love it.
Of it. You get the hints that, you know, the cleaner is emerging or some form of that guy that we saw in New Japan, you know, is emerging. He's obviously frustrated. He's trying to take it out. Definitely try to take it out on John Silver after their win against the Dark Order. The Elite get the victory. And after the post-match is where the story, to me, is takes the most importance is that Kenny Omega went for a powerbomb. He was going to powerbomb him on an open chair. Not where the cushion is, but just like, you know, on the edges of it. And Matt Jackson was able to, you know, convince Kenny not to. But you're seeing a more aggressive, more angry Kenny. Not the fun-loving Kenny that we saw in the beginning here in AEW. And I wonder what is going to be his breaking point. Because it seems like he is very close to that. And how is that going to affect the league going down the road? A lot of interesting questions about the Elite because, you know, obviously Cody seems to have broken off from there. He's doing his own thing, and we'll get to Cody in a little bit as well. Hangman kind of being in his own thing, having drinks with FTR. So you kind of see the Elite right now, a lot of holes in them right now. Don't seem as united as you would think. Definitely not as united from a couple months ago with the whole Stadium Stampede match where they were as close as a cohesive unit as you're ever going to see. But now not so much, man. And you're kind of starting to see a lot of holes with them, Trendsetter. That's all you can say right now. It's not right now an ideal situation for the Elite to be, you know, 100% right now. They're not cohesive.
Well, they're not cohesive at all. You're right about that. They have not shown unity in what seems to be the longest time right now. Sure, you put them in tag matches, it looks great, but it's, you know, in terms of all of them being on the same page mentally, it's definitely not there. Kenny, the only thing I could kind of compare what the frustration of Kenny is and kind of get an understanding is, man, Silver must have said something really mean to him in order to get that beating. Or if it's not that, then basically the mere fact that kind of what you and I have been talking about before, you know, even before we did the show on the unofficial WWE podcast for this recap show, basically, it's that the Kenny Omega that arrived from New Japan when AEW first had the inception of it and came up with the idea and became a reality was not the same Kenny Omega that we had seen in New Japan Pro Wrestling, where he's made a huge name for himself. And so whether it's the cleaner or a new version of the cleaner, I think it's more of just the frustration of Kenny feels like he's the odd man out. You see what Matt and Nick are doing, Adam, he's happy at the bar. That's all he needs. Cody has disassociated himself from the Elite. Marty's dead in their eyes, too. You know, wherever he's Ring of Honor, what's going to happen there? So Kenny really feels like he's alone. His best friend in New Japan is in New Japan, so like he has nowhere to go, nowhere to turn to. So to have that, plus the mere fact that everybody is critiquing him and saying, you know, this is not the Kenny Omega we want. What's going on? All that's probably leading up to a boiling point where, you know, it's going to be the point that either it's going to be the version of the cleaner or some type of version that we saw in New Japan. But I think eventually he's just going to snap. The pressure is getting to him. Not the pressure of being a champion, but the pressure that we all face, Jeff, every now and then, right, is leading up or living up to other people's expectations. And that's a difficult thing to do. And I think that's what's going on with Kenny right now.
Very true on that statement. It is very hard to live up to other people's expectations of you. So we'll see what Kenny's breaking point is as we head to AEW Thursday night next week. So remember, guys, AEW is this Thursday.
I can't keep up, Jeff. What's going on here,
because of the
man?
NBA playoffs, dude. What
you
can you do?
I hope the NBA playoffs ends really quickly. Well, it's been ruining my schedule.
No, because
it's ruining my schedule.
Because you needed this weekend off. You couldn't. It would have been tough to do a show on Wednesday.
This one. I don't need to readjust my schedule again next week. And then the week after, what's going to be on a Monday now? It's going to be what, on a Sunday? Come on, man. I need some continuity.
WCW used to do this when they were being pushed.
And what happened to WCW, Jeff?
Well, yeah.
They're out of business.
Out of business. Exactly. Yeah, because of the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. We get...
Wait, those are your words, not mine. I did not blame this on a particular organization. I said, let's hope the playoffs are over for this. The company moving the schedule, that's what it's about. Don't put me in war with the NBA right now. By the way, guys, let's get
technical. We get Mr. Personality, Alex Marvez, who's backstage, and they're hyping up a tag team gauntlet match next week, AEW tag title gauntlet match that's going to involve the Young Bucks, the Natural Nightmares, FTR, and the Best Friends, alongside Tully, hyping them up as their dude, and also saying that, hey, the Rock and Roll Express had it coming, and which did not really sit well with Hangman Page, because he's kind of been led to believe that the FTR are kind of stand-up dudes, right? Yeah. And so this is kind of like, you know, what's going on here? And eventually, guys, remember, you know, eventually people are going to come after you, because if you got something that they want, which basically FTR wants those tag team titles, hey, you know what? It's around the waist of Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. Eventually, they're going to come after you. And even though knowing all this stuff, Hangman Page still reluctantly toast with FTR. So right now, you got to believe the Hangman Page is torn here, because he wants to believe FTR. But you got to, Hangman, you've been doing so many things so good this past year. I'm calling you the man because you've got that it. You found it. But now, do not fall for FTR's fake friendship here, because you toast with them, you know they're going to come after you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the point. They want to be the tag team champions, right? Well, but I think Adam, he's no fool. He knows what's going on here. And I think the thing that's making him reluctant in terms of why he toasted and why he kind of continued on with the whole charade was basically, Jeff, is that they were speaking certain truths. He's been in the Elite's shadows. He's been the odd man out. When it was Cody, the Bucks,
that's truth
and
right
Kenny,
there. Yeah.
He's been, and even Marty, to an extent, he's been the odd man.
Wait, throwing in Marty.
Well, he's dead now, so it doesn't matter. But, guys, he's not really dead. He's dead from the Elite. Yeah, he's been the odd man out. We've always been talking about how, you know, he's wonky. You know, he has that it factor. He just doesn't seem to have that confidence about him. What's going on here? Wait till he wins a title, then he'll be his own man. He hasn't won a title yet. Now he's a tag team champion. And now he walks around as if he knows he's that guy. But the thing is, he doesn't want to go back into the shadows, because he's done so much for himself since he first signed with AEW. Dealing with the turmoil of losing the AEW championship match against Chris Jericho, going on a downward spiral, finding himself again. And so although he is against what FTR has done in terms of showing disrespect, what they did to the Rock and Roll Express, they are speaking truth here. So that's, hey, I'm a little bit torn too. I don't know if I toast the guys, but I'm a little torn too. You know why? Because although they're going after what I got, which is a personal attack on my part, I mean, if I was Adam, I'd be like, FTR, you're taking the one thing right now that I have that's special to me. Oh, you better second guess yourself now doing this. They are speaking truth too, because that title is so important. So maybe the pressure builds up more for Adam, because knowing that if he loses those tag team titles with Kenny out of the equation here, because they're not best friends either, Adam or Kenny. But if he loses that, he might lose the newfound identity he's found. So a lot of things are now jumbling in Adam's mind right now, which I can understand. They've spoken a lot of truths, and now maybe he's not doubting himself, but doubting now the elite in terms of their friendship and if they're looking out for his best interest right now, or should Adam be looking out for his own best interest?
The AEW women's division may be getting a kick that it so deserves as far as a kickstart, because it now shows that Thunder Rosa, the NWA women's champion, has arrived in AEW, and she doesn't want anything but a shot at the AEW Women's Championship. So that is going to be interesting, and we are going to get it all out. Does Thunder Rosa, in your mind, add something towards this AEW Women's Division, which honestly, we've talked about it for weeks and weeks now. It kind of needed a kickstart. Will this do it? Because we were talking, like we said, we were talking about the Nyla Rose and being the only significant person here that could be a threat to the Women's Championship here. Mm-hmm. Thunder Rosa, does she add any interest to you heading into All Out, being a viable opponent for the AEW Women's Championship? Should Hikaru Shida be worried about Thunder Rosa? Because let's be honest, everybody loves Thunder Rosa. Everybody's on a bandwagon. Well,
not everyone.
Well, so what are your thoughts? Does she give him a kickstart?
A kickstart, yes. Is she the solution? No. But again, it involves the intriguing element now where, for me at least, when I saw Thunder Rosa on AEW television on TNT, I was thinking, okay, well, now we have the NWA Women's Champion against the AEW Women's Champion, if that does happen, and I hope it does. And it's interesting booking, though, because, you know, Thunder Rosa adds some more depth into a women's division that, you know, is sorely lacking of it. So they're building it. They have every release. They have Diamante. You know, the list goes on and on of additions they've added on to this women's roster. But it still needs more. So, yeah, she adds up a kickstart. But to me now, believe it or not, as much as it's interesting now for the women's division in terms of possibly seeing Thunder Rosa and Shida in the ring, it also makes me think, could we possibly have NWA working now with AEW? That would be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, because you've seen the crossover. You've seen Kingston. Yeah. You've seen Ricky Starks, who we'll talk to in a little bit. And Thunder Rosa now showing up on AEW TV. We know the whole NWA situation. They're not really recording right now or doing anything, but they say that they'll be back. So, you know, hopefully we get more wrestling down the road.
Yeah, I think that would be great in terms of business move, because NWA could work alongside there, mm-hmm. use AEW's platform until they're ready to start recording.
Yeah, and from the last we know, I think they've also been working with Ring of Honor as well, too. Mm-hmm. And this is where for a kind of maybe a 1A or lower tier dream match, the way they've built Hikaru Shida and the way that they've built NWA Thunder Rosa, this is kind of like a mini dream match that mm-hmm. you're like, okay, you know, we're going to get to see this all out.
Champion versus champion.
It's probably the best match that they could have created for All Out between these two, because it's going to draw some eyes here to the women's division, which needed it. Talking about something else that the AEW women's division has tried to do is this tag team cup. And, you know, I haven't caught it on YouTube because that's where they've put it. And we were wondering if they were going to put the finals on AEW television, because they only get 2 hours, right? And they really haven't been focusing on the women lately, unless it's either Britt Baker or it's going to be for the AEW Women's Championship. So you're like, oh, is this going to make it to TV? It does. And surprisingly, when we looked at the finals, we were like, oh, okay, Brandi and Allie, they're undefeated. Oh, okay, this is them winning the Tag Team Cup. But it really doesn't happen, because they make it to the finals, but they end up losing to Ivelisse and Diamante. And I think the match was pretty good. It was pretty decent. Brandi has been absolutely has done a great job wrestling. She's really, you know, gotten better.
She's improved.
Yeah. And surprising at the result that Allie and Brandi didn't end up winning this thing.
No, not surprised at all. You know why? Because I think that's the way it should have been done. I think people wanted to give the impression that, oh, because they're undefeated, because they've done so well together, that eventually they were going to win it. But I think really, I don't know where AEW is going with this, but I think they're really interested in seeing a Brandi Rhodes-Ali rivalry, because they've hinted at things like that they're not necessarily always on the same page. Maybe in the ring they are, but outside the ring, they're very different and have their own ulterior motives, I guess, in a way. But happy for Ivelisse and Diamante. And it also it brings eyes to a newer team. Or in this case, who knows if they'll stay a team, Ivelisse or Diamante. But it brings the spotlight on them for a particular moment. Because at the end of the day, you know, Brandi is an executive, you know. as much as she's improved in the ring, I don't think she'll be in the ring full time.
Yeah, no.
And with Allie, I think Allie's at the stage in her career where, yeah, she, you know, to see the fact that she could, you know, for example, become a champion down the road or whatever. I think she's at the point right now where it doesn't hurt that she helps put other people over. And that's what you need right now. Like I said, we spoke about it previously, a division that needs a lot of depth. And if you're going to possibly, and at some point, who knows, depending on the depth you have and the talent you have there, create a tag team women's division, it's a good step in the right direction. So, no, I'm not surprised and really happy for Evelise and Diamante for winning that one. And, again, it broke the norm of what we always deal with where, oh, this is so predictable. We know what's going to happen. It changed that up, and it was a nice surprise.
We'll get back to the women's division in just a little bit, but let's go to this. This Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara rivalry is really getting personal. Obviously, we've seen that. We've talked about the chair shot that Sammy Guevara hit on Matt Hardy. That was crazy. Matt Hardy tried to get some retribution this past week.
Ooh.
And basically just threw Sammy like a ragdoll off the stage onto a table. It's personal. Matt Hardy wants to end Sammy Guevara, and we're going to get a tables match next week, next Thursday on AEW.
Yes, I am excited for this just for the mere fact that, you know, whatever you want to say about Matt Hardy, we know. Whatever version we get, there's been like 13 versions of Matt Hardy. This one seems to be more the realistic, the real Matt Hardy inside, the family man, the guy who's done this for how long, and Sammy Guevara. And the thing with this is this gives the ability, and why I'm excited for it, gives the ability of showcasing Sammy in a different light. Yes, he's a high flyer. He can do all the flips and the moves. He's the sexy Spanish god, although I don't think he's that damn sexy, if you give, you know, ask my honest opinion. But he's a great guy when you get to talk to him and get to know him. Well, I've had a chance to interview him. But again, it shows another side. He's not just the athletic heartthrob. This guy can fight, and that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a fight. So it's going to be interesting to see this side of Sammy, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Another match next week that we're going to get is going to be a handicap match. It's going to be, well, first of all, Big Swole is going to get her opportunity at Britt Baker, but it is going to be a handicap match. It's going to be Rebby. It's going to be Britt Baker and Penelope Ford, as Booker T would call it, Penelope Ford, against Big Swole. So
that's awesome. I love
this
that.
This is probably going to lead up to a match, maybe at All Out, between Britt and Big Swole. But again, this is another way that the women's division is getting more storylines involved here. And basically, Britt Baker and Rebby, you're trading in makeup and dentist work for, trying to take out Big Swole. We're going to get a handicap match here. And I just think it's good advancement here in storylines. Britt Baker's been very entertaining. Yes, I said it. Britt Baker's been very entertaining since his whole heel turn. She's done a great job. I can't really criticize her anymore. But you got to believe that this is going to lead to a match of Battle Out between Britt and Big Swole. Big Swole's got to get her revenge here, her retribution against Britt Baker eventually. It's not going to happen next week. It's going to be 3-on-1. The odds are going to be stacked against her. But you kind of see towards the end that you're going to get that singles matchup, hopefully at All Out.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that's the goal. That's the
that's what
they've
been
building up to right now. So you would think, yes, it's got to make sense. It's got to happen. You never know, though. But yeah, that's the one we want to see because, you know, a lot of people, they'll have their own interpretation and their own feeling of what Britt Baker is. But I think Britt has become one of the most entertaining things on AEW. And a huge credit goes to her in terms of from what she once was prior to AEW to what she was when she first stepped into AEW, dealing with all the pressure of all the expectations. She was the first woman signed. And now the ability of dealing with, you know, the nose injury and the knee injury and now really reinventing this character as a quote-unquote role model, as we've seen before, maybe other programs of what a role model is. But again, done a great job of making you really want to hate her. She's become this irritating, arrogant prick in a way. And it's something that you're looking forward to seeing. And huge applause to Britt Baker. There's nothing against Big Swole, but at the same time, Britt's really carrying the storyline and making you want to see this. And by now having this tease where we're going to have, where it's going to be a handicap match, you know Britt Baker's not going to be in that match, but it gives you the ability, oh, I want Big Swole to get her hands on her. But hopefully we'll see that at All Out.
Darby Allin has really been spotlighted a lot, but he's taken a few L's. Here, he takes on Will Hobbs, gets a victory, helps him get back to his winning ways. But it looks like they're going to continue this feud with Brian Cage, Ricky Starks, Taz, and Darby Allin. I get that they have to put Darby Allin in this thing, but for Brian Cage, and Ricky Starks to have to double team a guy that's 160 pounds is the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen. Well, no, I've seen tons of ridiculous things.
Yeah, but I was about to say.
This is so idiotic, trendsetter, because as much as I heap the praises on AEW, they can't do everything right. It can't be, you know, it can't be throwing them bouquets all the time. Brian Cage, who's 275 freaking pounds, who is basically like 2.5 Darby Allins, do you really need a whole faction to take on Darby Allin? It is just, to me, makes no sense. And I mean, I know they love Darby Allin. I know they're hyping him up. I know they continue to be behind him. JR loves him. That's fine and all. He's good. He's entertaining. Don't get me wrong. He's all these things. But when you have two guys, when you have Ricky Starks and Brian Cage having to literally like go against these tactics to try to fool a guy that's 160 pounds, come on. It really doesn't make any sense. And so you get Taz on the mic after Darby Allin's victory. They said they got a new member, and it's basically Ricky Starks dressed as Darby Allin. They kind of mock him a little bit, which sets up a distraction. They need to sneak behind a 160-pound guy to get an advantage, and that, to me, is where it loses here. It loses my interest because There's no way. You need Brian Cage to really sneak attack 160-pound guy. That's just crazy. And whether we get the match at all in or whether whatever, I mean,
well, it's the bully tactic. It's them being bullies to him. It's not necessarily them, you know, needing to do that in order to attack.
It's
heel heat. It's what it is. It's them again being the classic bullies where, listen, we're gonna pick on this little guy and treat him, you know, not because he's such a huge threat that they need to sneak attack him, but just really make his life a miserable living hell, which he probably is already living anyway to begin with. But you know, that's the feeling. I mean, the mere fact that they're trying to build Darby Allin, and maybe that's right. Maybe you have some, you know, you're right on some of those aspects too. They're trying to make him into this credible guy, but in a sense he has credibility anyway, and yeah, maybe, you know, you're right, he's 115 pounds with two bricks in his hand but soaking wet, I think it's more of the bully tactic, man. I think that's what it really is right now. I think you're drawing a little bit too much into it. He's over, but like you said before, you don't see him as an AEW champion, but ultimately he is somebody that, you know, when we do get fans back, that, you know, fans want to see.
You know.
Same thing. They want to root against the underdog, and that's the classic storyline.
I guess, trendsetter. I mean, but I don't know. I guess you can see from your point the bully tactics I get, and so it was a really busy.
A lot of stuff.
AEW Dynamite, a lot of stuff, you know. And then you eventually had NXT TakeOver 30, so it was bleeding into that. I really had no reason to watch that unless I wanted to see Adam Cole versus Pat McAfee, or maybe the finals because of Karrion Kross versus Keith Lee. But after that, like, I was sticking with AEW the whole time through, you know. Mm-hmm. So. You know, it's still entertaining. It was really a good show. And then the controversial ending here, which we're going to focus on right now, is the TNT Championship was on the line. It was Brody Lee, the leader of the Dark Order,
Mr. Lee.
Cody. And at the end of the day, when you sit back and you analyze this match, you think, wow, they put this belt on Cody, this brand new belt. They had Cody take on all comers, struggle, fight, win, be impressive in victory, be a fighting champion, make that title so that Cody in about 3 minutes would lose that title and hand it over to Brody Lee. And at the end of the day, that's what that TNT Championship was for, to make Brody Lee that legitimate star. And did they do a good job about it? Time will tell, but the first impression that I get is they did, and the next thing that I get is, man, Lance Archer's got to be saying, what the F happened here? Because you have not, besides a couple of promos and some squash matches, you have not really seen them being behind the Lance Archer thing. Has that flamed out? Has it fizzled out? Do they think they have buyer's remorse? Brody Lee not only took out Cody Rhodes, he made you think, man, we're going to see Cody for a while. And then the Dark Order, who we said needed a new coat of paint.
Yeah, we did.
Demolished the Nightmare Family. Trendsetter, did they do right here? Was this the move to go with And did they do a good job? Were you impressed with the Dark Order?
Listen, to say they did the right thing, the easy thing would be, from Viz standpoint, yes. You know why? Because they're investing time and they've invested their interest in giving it to Brody Lee.
Mr. Lee.
But if you're asking me my opinion, no, I don't think this is the right decision. Because, listen, I like Brody Lee. I really do. I think he has a lot of intangibles from a man his size and what he can do in the ring and what he could talk for on the microphone. But when I look at him and then... Again, I'm not even going to compare it to the whole Lance Archer situation. We could dive into that, and I'll dive into that in a second, though. But the mere fact that, you know, Brody Lee, who, coming from the WWE when he was Luke Harper, you know, had a lot of people that were rooting for him. The fans wanted to see him do something other than just being his generic white family character. But then you bring him into AEW, and you look at Cody and the kind of guy he is and what he's done, what he's accomplished, and what he's done with that title, and you give it on to him. I don't know. I don't think that was the right decision to make right now because, in my opinion, though, you know, and people say, well, if it wasn't Brody Lee, who was it going to be? Lance Archer might have been a guy. I just think that that title still needed to be built even more, and to have a long-reign champion as Cody would have made a lot of sense. But ultimately, this decision they made, I don't agree with it. It probably maybe would have been different. Who knows? Maybe if there's an audience therapy, that shock value, that the audience would go silent and quiet. And maybe he would get the reaction of boos and then heat that he wanted. But right now, in this time situation, I don't think there's a reason to have taken the title off of Cody and to give it to Brody, who's a guy now that he's given the opportunity.
Trendsetter, it's not about taking the title off of him. It's that this is what their plan was for the TNT Championship all along. It's not that they took it off of Cody. It's that this was Cody's plan all along to build these nine matches. He defended this title nine times successfully against newcomers, against guys from other independent scenes, right? He a legitimate guy in Scorpio Sky, and then that was the final one that legitimized that title because he took on Scorpio Sky, a guy that was established in AEW. Well, established or was the name, right?
Yeah.
That was the win, and that was when you were like, okay, that's when the wheel started rolling, saying, all right, now it's time for, now that I've done this, now it's time to put it on Brody. And hey, listen, no offense whatsoever. It got a few flurries in, Trendsetter, and then once it went to the outside, it was over with, and Brody Lee got, without a doubt, Trendsetter, that was a dominant win. So it was all made to shine up Brody Lee as the guy, and probably the next guy in line, you know, that's not Jon Moxley. So we could see a paradigm shift at All Out. We could see a TNT champion in Brody Lee and MJF as the world champion. So there's a lot of stuff going on here too, right? I mean, and are we going to see Cody? Is this kind of like a writing off Cody for a little bit before he makes a triumphant return? Or what's next for Cody, do you think?
I don't know. I think right now the smart thing for Cody would be it takes some significant time off of TV right now. Be an executive, be a producer in the back.
Oh, he's going to sell his injury too.
Yeah, he's going to sell it. Makes sense. I mean, he's done all this to make Brody lead, right? So now give it to Brody and have a situation where the Dark Order either mocks the Nightmare Family and this continues on where, you know, we'll eventually see Cody down the road. But, you know, you'd like to hope he would have a match in All Out. You know, that's kind of been his home away from home when they're in Chicago. But I don't really see it happening. And if there's a rematch, I think if they do have a rematch, it'll be the same end result. And be dominated, destroyed, and then have some significant time off of TV until they can figure out what they want to do here.
Yeah, but, you know, we talked about it for the longest time. And even though the Dark Order lost in the show this week to the Elite, this whole thing legitimizes them.
Yeah. And talking about Lance Archer real quick, I'm not saying he's shaking his head and thinking, what's going on here? Because, again, he signed for a particular reason, and they probably told him what they were planning on doing with him. But at the same time, if I'm Lance Archer, people who are looking at Lance Archer, I'm like, wait a minute. Lance Archer wasn't this supposed to be this huge monster coming from New Japan, this guy who was going to destroy everybody, which he did prior to getting to the finals. And
it's
going to
take a lot of shining title to get Lance Archer back.
And now this happens. Like, how do you bring that guy back? That's going to be the difficult thing.
Yeah, I mean, hey, listen, would I be down for a Lance Archer versus Brody Lee match? Oh, heck yeah.
But
who do you make face? Who's the face of here, you know?
Well, it'd be Lance, but I don't think that works for him.
It doesn't. So now, like, I don't know. I wouldn't have buyer's remorse because Lance Archer is a big dude, a very athletic guy. You've seen what he does in New Japan. He kind of had like talent. He had a rebirth here, you know?
He's a talent. But unfortunately, you put the talent now in purgatory, in my opinion, in a way, because now, like, all right, what do you do with him?
While you revived the Dark Order and Brody Lee, you kind of, your other toy that you had, your other guy here, you kind of, it's going to take a lot for him
I believe. Do you believe too for him to get back into that, like?
Yeah, like I said, there's gonna be a lot of work now in terms of giving him that relevance. He had so much momentum coming in. He had so much fear of what he could do and what he's done in the past in New Japan, and now the all the outcomes have happened. He's really not done anything. Some backstage segments, and that's it. I mean, that's what you're paying the guy for. That's what you're using him for. To me, Lance Archer has gone from Lance Archer, the guy from New Japan, to Lance Hoyt, the guy from TNA.
Ooh.
That's unfortunate. That's what they've done, in my opinion.
Even with Jake Roberts in his corner, that's crazy to say. So, Trendsetter, another amazing episode of AEW Dynamite. I mean, nitpicking, you know, is the whole Darby Allin thing, but other than that, just a well done job with the show on Saturday. It had a good feel to it. You kind of felt like it was like that old WCW Saturday night, right? 6 o'clock start.
Yeah.
And not 6:05, but 6 o'clock start. Well, it didn't even start at 6 because the playoffs overran. So that's another thing that messed us up too, because we're like looking and making sure that we're not recording something else, because it was just weird, because you know playoffs are gonna overrun. But still, very enjoyable edition of AEW Dynamite. They have to, because hey, All Out is coming up. It's like right around the corner, so they got to get these shows in. They got to get everything in here, and I'm looking forward to All Out, Trendsetter.
Yeah.
The contract signing is next week on a special episode on Thursday. We'll be with you. Most likely, the episode here will drop on Friday morning. And guys, it's been another great show, Trendsetter. I love working with you, dude. Glad we had the little vacation on Wednesday, but now you enjoyed a Saturday episode. You got a Saturday review here, and the Jersey Wrecking Crew loves doing this for the WWE Unofficial Podcast. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I'm Jeff Martin, alongside the Trendsetter, Brian Berger. Follow us on all our social media, at High Spot Podcast, on BodySlam.net, on the Shining Wizards Network. We are there. And Trendsetter, just put a ribbon on this one.
Well, the ribbon is that basically, guys, you enjoyed another episode. We love it so much. We'll see you next week at some point in time when the schedule gets back to normalcy. But again, excited to do this episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll catch you next week. And remember, we do this for one reason and one reason only. We do this for you,
the crew.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.